We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Grinders, welcome to Roto Grinders. Today I'm Jordan Cooper, aka Blender at Blender HD. You're gonna follow me on Twitter, and it's Friday, February 23rd. We'll be taking a look at tomorrow's UFC Mexico slate. 13 fights as of now. They're going through weigh-ins. We may be losing a fight, you never know, but we'll be going over that. It's intriguing card, a little bit different, I think, a little different context than usual. But hit that thumbs up button on your way in the door. I'll wave my thumbs at you. Yes, John's waving the goddamn thumbs. Hit the thumbs up button. Hit the subscribe button. Hit the notification bell to know when we go live. If you want NBA content later today on Grinders Live, Crunch Time, we got some NBA games today. So check out that on the channel later today. I'm here with Squirrel Patrol, John Breslin, for a 13-fight card. I like the larger cards, right? Right. Once we get the 13, 14, 15 fight cards, you know, definitely beats, you know, the 10, 11, 12 fight nights or whatever, that some of those are coming up. It's in Mexico. It's not a pay-per-view, but we do have 2 5-round fights on the slate. And we also don't have a single fight that is over lightweight. So this is a lot of 125s, 135s, 145, like the smaller fighters, right? They're in Mexico. A lot of Mexican fighters. Does that change your... we'll talk about the 2 5-round fights in a second, but just from a fight perspective, I know the Ground and Pound podcast will be coming out soon for premium members. Liam and Mike will break it all down. But do you take a look at how DraftKings scoring works and how it may be contextually different when we have so many fights that are going to be featured in the lower weight classes?
Well, and I think we're at elevation too. So I do think they didn't want the heavyweights out there stumbling around in the high elevation, gassing out. So I think cardio is a factor. And I do think that, with the later weight classes, you tend to see a little bit more action. I think we could see some high scores, because I think you could see if a fighter does gas out and, then you could potentially see their opponent suddenly rack up a lot of points very quickly, with a lot of either ground and pound, but, strikes or standing strikes. So it weighs into my thinking a little bit. I think what really weighs into my thinking is that we're in Mexico. There's a lot of Mexican fighters. We saw in Canada, the Canadian fighters did very, very well. In Paris, the French fighters did very, very well. I would expect the Mexican fighters to do very, very well here. Now, that's obviously going to be like baked into the lines already. I don't know if it gets baked in enough. I do think there's like, you know, a home octagon advantage, just like, you know, in NBA, like, you know, Denver has a big advantage playing at home at elevation, you know, and it affects the refs, you know, and I think it affects the judges even more in UFC, where they're trying to judge sometimes a close fight, you know, whose strikes were more impactful. Like, while one fighter had the crowd going, you know, every time they landed a strike, and the other didn't. So I think it makes an impact. So that's kind of my thought process with this card.
Yeah. Also, when it comes to the lighter weight classes, you say there's more action, but not necessarily finishing action, but more volume. The lower weight classes tends to feature more striking, less wrestling, although we do have some grapplers on the slate. But like heavyweight fights, the reason why heavyweight fights are high variance is because one punch could knock anyone out at that weight class. And you get guys that either win in the first round or by the third round, they're just stumbling. Both guys are just stumbling around, and the winner scores like 54 points because they just don't throw enough volume. Here at the lower weight classes, they throw a lot of volume, but you don't see as many knockouts, right? You may get a ground and pound finish or anything, but I think focusing on the fighters, I mean, without looking at odds and without looking at projections, focusing on the fighters that have high volume out, the fights at least, that look to be high volume from a striking perspective, may be much more worthwhile on this slate, as opposed to other slates where we have a mix of weight classes where, well, you got, you know, a welterweight or a middleweight that, you know, does some wrestling, you know, has some grappling, some things like that. So, like, on this slate, we have guys like Naimov or Rosas Jr., Chares to some extent, even like Ronnie Barcelos, that have some, like, wrestling in their back. Well, Naimov and Rosas are most likely going to be grappling. But guys like Manuel Torres and Yair Rodriguez, I mean, even on the lower level, I mean, Ricky Tercios, they're guys that they could easily, in three rounds, put up 200, 250 strikes in a fight. Maybe they're not all significant strikes, but we may not necessarily see finishes in these fights, but the winner in three rounds at this weight class could still put up 90 to 100 points, as opposed to the heavier weight classes, where if they go to the decision, typically your fight is busting at that point. So I'm less inclined, especially if you look down the card on the ITD lines, like with the exception of maybe like two or three guys, like the ITD lines are like the same for like everyone in some extent, right? You take a look in the mid range, it's like everyone's in this like 35 to 42% range. Even at the high end, yeah, you got Chares, you got Naimov that are over 50%. At the low end, you have like Altamirano and Hughes who probably aren't finishing anyone. It may be one of the few slates, John, that I'm not waiting winning inside the distance as much, because it's quite possible at these striking volumes that an early second round finish from one fighter may not even outscore a third round decision from another fighter.
Yeah, that's actually, I haven't really thought about it in that exact manner, but yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's going to be somewhat like high variance, because you aren't necessarily like seeing a guy who's got like a, you know, 2/3 chance of winning, or, you know, 50% chance of winning in the first round. You know, and I guess you know, see some variance there where they either, you know, get the early finish or not, and if they don't, it's not very high scoring. This one, you can see some fighters where you're not necessarily expecting that they're going to put up a high score, but if they get the really high volume, they can. I do think there'll be some grappling, and I mean, we still have some pretty decent, you know, inside the distance lines. We have to see what happens with the Chires Lacerda fight, because that's one of the ones that's really expected to end inside the distance, and now both players have missed weight, which may make it more likely that the fight's on, rather than one fighter missing weight. But we got to see what the exact details are there.
Before we talk about that fight, let's talk about the fact that there's 2 5-round fights on the slate. A lot of times, especially not on non-pay-per-views, we don't have 2 5-round fights. So Moreno and Royval, 5-rounder. Rodriguez and Ortega, 5-rounder. They're priced in the mid-range. Moreno, 8,800. Rodriguez, 8,500. Ortega, 7,700. Royval, 7,400. It's a 13-fight card, assuming that everyone, weighs in and we're good. You have to expect that. I mean, I'm assuming Moreno is going to be one of, if not the highest owned fighter on the entire slate, especially against Brandon Royval, who probably has a chance to win in like the first round or two. And I mean, he's not the type. He's a pseudo kill or be killed type of fighter. But Rodriguez and Ortega, they both have decent inside the distance lines. Obviously, Ortega hasn't fought in a while. If these fights go the distance with the striking volume, I mean, of Rodriguez and Ortega, the winner of that fight is going to score massively in a decision. But I think Moreno and Royval, It feels to me that when our optimal rates, our sims come out, right, which will come out later today for premium members. So click on that link in the description and get $10 off your first month. I get the sense that these guys are gonna tower over how often that, like, I think a lineup that doesn't include a single 5-round fighter is going to have such a low optimal rate that I don't even know if I would consider playing anyone, like at any lineup that doesn't at least contain one of these fighters. And I think there are enough paths that playing both 2 5-round fights, obviously only one fighter from each fight, is just going to prove out to be much more likely to hit. Because it's hard at these prices for them to fail with striking volume in 5 rounds.
Yeah, I agree. I would be surprised. I'll probably in my 150 sets maybe have a fight. Or maybe have a handful of lineups that don't have either. That would probably be a mistake on my part that it just ends up happening. I think you could definitely like fade maybe one of the fights. I can't see myself not having any fighter from. I don't think that's a smart lineup, having none of the fighters from the 2 5-round fights. I don't know how many people are going to realize the Ortega, Rodriguez fight is actually 5 rounds. Because I don't really understand why it is 5 rounds, but it is. And I think that does add to the upside for that fight. I particularly like Ortega, but, at his price. And actually, I kind of like Royval as well. I don't necessarily like Royval to win the fight, but I'll be over the projected ownership, if that makes sense. And I do think that Brandon Moreno is an interesting fade, not because of price, but maybe because of ownership. Like, I do think there's a chance that, I think the chance that he wins the fight but doesn't land on the winning lineup, especially with the other 5-round fight, is going to be underestimated. So I like the idea maybe of being a little bit under the field on Brandon Moreno, but I think that's actually it's a scary fade, because he's not low volume. He's just not particularly high volume where you have to say, like, oh, if he wins a decision, he definitely is going to land on the winning line. Like, it's possible he ends up in the 90s, kind of similar to Nakamura last week, where I thought Nakamura was going to be extremely popular, but it's possible that he just gets like a 90-point win and doesn't necessarily land on the optimal lineup.
Well, the thing that makes Moreno such a good play is that he's 8,800 and he's currently minus 300 to win. and you typically don't even get those win odds. Like if DraftKings repriced the fights, I mean, there's been enough line movement since this card has come out that based on win odds only, some of these fighters are just underpriced or overpriced. I mean, we have Moreno at minus 300 at 8,800. We got Manuel Torres at minus 200 at 8,300. Mendonca is minus 215 at 8,400. And then you obviously got Jiraguí and Chares and Naimov are all like minus 500 plus. The thing that scares me about fading Moreno is that Brandon Royval, if he wins, I would be very hard for me to say that he's not optimal, because he most likely wins in the first round or two, and he's at 7,400. He's going to score enough that in his win condition, he's going to be optimal. The thing about Moreno is that in his last bunch of fights, like his scoring in wins have been like 80s, 90s, even in these five-round fights. But he's been facing much better competition than Brandon Royval. So, like, the scary part of me is that I agree. Like, Brandon Moreno's 8,800, and he could easily get 96 points in a win and get priced out of the top lineup because someone above him, Rosa scores 100, Naimov scores 102, whatever. Manuel Torres is 110. But Royval's the type of fighter that, like, Moreno, I mean, Moreno could just run him over. I mean, and Moreno, the thing is about these fights is that if it's one-sided, it may not even be like a finish. It may just be like round after round of punishment, right? You could see someone like Naimov against Eric Silva, you know, just like three rounds of two takedowns each and tons of ground and pound, and he ends up with 167 points because the line should have been even wider in that scenario. So when you have five rounds to work with, I don't know, because Moreno is not necessarily as much of a, I mean, plus 135 looks good when in comparison to like a three round fight, but it's plus 135 within five rounds. So that isn't as great of an ITD line as you would think, but he's minus 300 to win at 8,800. And I mean, I'm not saying that you can't make lineups without Moreno. It just, I look at these five-round fights and I go, they got five rounds to work with. It's like, if I don't have Moreno in the lineup, I have Yair Rodriguez in the lineup, because, I mean, that fight is much closer. So that Rodriguez is minus 156. Ortega's plus 136. But it's quite possible the line should be wider depending on, you know, what Ortega looks like. Or it could be the opposite, and Ortega comes out and finishes Yair Rodriguez. It still comes down to, maybe I'm just repeating myself, that now I think I'm going to be making 50, 60 lineups tomorrow, and I just make a group that says at least one of any of these guys, and maybe possibly a lot of my lineups just have two of them.
Yeah, I think that's totally reasonable. I get worried, like, what if Moreno gets like an early second round win, you know, and it's 88 points, and then
right,
yeah, that, I think that's a concern. I think the field will underestimate. I think especially with the narrative, like the fights in Mexico City, you know, Brandon Moreno, former champion. So I do think that there's a possibility he gets an early second round win, and that, like, that's a possibility for all fighters. But it's a reason that, you know, maybe the highest owned fighter is going to be, end up being overwhelmed. And I think that the highest owned fighter in this case is Brandon Moreno. It's interesting because there is a lot of like line equity, or like equity for the price, but it almost all starts to cancel each other out. Like, yeah, you don't usually see fighters, you know, priced at was 8,300 for Manuel Torres that have such a high chance of winning. But, you know, with so many of the fighters, like, it doesn't really stand out that much when you look at all the other fighters, because I guess there are just some lopsided lines, you know, and so I don't know that, like, Torres is probably the best example where you're getting, you know, some real, you know, win equity for the price, but it's not as much as it might be on another card.
Right, but you also get he's the best. He's the third highest ITD line. I mean, the Torres Duncan fight, outside. I think the two fights that are most likely to end inside the distance are Torres Duncan and Cherez da Silva. Are you prioritizing like to me on the high end? I'm much more concerned. Like what you said about someone winning, but not putting up a high enough score. And we talk about this all the time when it comes to field size. So when you're playing the larger field stuff, optimal rates matter a lot more because the winning lineup tends to be the optimal or at least close to the optimal. So Moreno scoring 98 points and being the eighth highest scorer and not making the optimal lineup. Large field, that's bad. But in small field, you could still win, you know, a 500-person field with that. But with these two fights, like, I'm much more likely to side with the lower-priced fighter. I'm not talking about the underdog, but the lower. Like, I'm much more likely to play Manuel Torres than Edgar Cherez, right? With those two fights, most likely to end inside the distance. Because Cherez is 9,300, and him scoring, he could legitimately score 115 points and still not make the optimal. Manuel Torres scoring 115 points at 8,300. I don't know. I would kind of bet a lot of money that at that price, it's going to be hard for him not to be a top four scorer, top five scorer on the entire slate. So I tend to side with if there's a mispricing or, you know, like I'd much rather play a lineup into 48% Manuel Torres ownership than 32% Edgar Cherez ownership.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Cherez definitely has a better chance of being priced off the winning lineup. And Torres, like I was giving him an example that like the win equity doesn't necessarily stand out as much as it does. But yeah, also having one of the highest inside the distance lines helps a lot, especially for that price. So I don't think I'm going to like aim to be under the field on Torres. I think he's got, you know, as good a chance as probably any other fighter as having the highest score. Because he could, you know, has a pretty decent chance of a first round finish. It'll be interesting to see. We're assuming the Cherez fight goes on. I kind of like him as a fighter because he has a pretty good chance of inside the distance as well. He just doesn't like to kind of stand out next to Torres, but I think he's still one of my favorite fighters on the card. So we'll see. We'll see how badly we need the salary as well. Because when you have a couple of underdogs start to win, then suddenly salary, you know, the highest priced fighters don't have to put up such an outlier score to land on the winning lineup or to land on the optimal lineup even. Because suddenly you have that salary.
So at the high end, when we're talking about those cases, we got other fighters up here. We got the only female fight on the slate, Yasmin Yuregui against Sam Hughes. She's the biggest favorite on the slate, minus 600. You got Felipe Dos Santos at minus 290 against Victor Altamirano. Then you got Naimov Silva. Naimov's a minus 575 favorite currently with a minus 135 inside the distance. And then you got Raul Rosas Jr., the 19-year-old kid against Ricky Tercios, who is also young. And Rosas is minus 220 inside, 220 win equity. And obviously, with Naimov and Rosas, you have wrestling, right? Naimov is primarily a wrestler. Rosas is primarily, you know, jiu-jitsu. I mean, the issue that typically Rosas has is that he doesn't really strike on the ground, right? Tends to be like submit. If he gets a first round submission, like that's great. But if he gets a second round of submission, he may not score as well as you would hope for. And then you got, obviously, Dos Santos Altamirano, which he is the worst inside the distance line on the slate. And Altamirano isn't bad, but, I mean, he doesn't finish anyone. I mean, this is a fight that's most likely they're going to go to decision. And then you have Yasmin Yuregui, who essentially is just a striker, right, against Sam Hughes, who I don't want to say is bad, but I think, you know, the talent gap is wide enough. Obviously, they're fighting in Mexico, and Yasmin is from Mexico. She's going to be kind of reliant. She, to me, at 9,500, like there are paths where she could score a knockout at the end of the first round and still not make the optimal lineup, right? Because it really doesn't have any other paths other than a knockout to score 100 points. You know, I always say I've made most of my GPP wins on taking these higher priced, low, like not good inside the distance line female fighters because they're going to be low owned. I don't know if I mean, I said it about Miranda Maverick last slate. I just see too many paths. I mean, dude, I see so many people in the mid range that can outscore her in and of himself. She has to outscore everyone. Like, it's not just like, oh, she has to put up a good score. Like, no, she has to literally, she must have at least a top six score. And even then she could get priced out if not enough underdogs win. So what are your thoughts on, like, I don't want to play who wants to play Chera's Naimov Moreno lineups or any like these lineups, like with, when you're 30% this guy, 38% that guy, 42%, like, is the way to get different with these someone at the top over here, or is it more in the bottom range? And we'll talk about the underdogs in a second.
Yeah, I want to get to Yasmin, just for the contrarian angle, but it's just so hard. I just can't see it unless she starts grappling, which is like a possibility. But I just think it's unlikely. And you're right. Like, she has to do so much. And there's a $200 gap between her and Chires, as the next most expensive fighter. I don't like being under the field on a fighter who's almost certainly going to win, almost certainly going to have like a dominant win, and isn't highly owned. But yeah, I just don't see her putting up a top six score.
If you're playing small field, I could see doing that. If you're playing very small field, if you wanted to, but you get you, I can tell from your voice, you get it by like, dude, this, she may be in a case where she needs a quick win bonus to make the optimal lineup. Like, that's
right.
That may be the only path to get there. And like, who wants to, I don't care that she's going to be like 10, 12% owned. Like, that doesn't happen more than 10, 12% of the time.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, last fight, she was the one that gave up the quick win bonus. Yeah, she was knocked out at the first punch from D. Gomes. So, yeah, I don't know. I agree. And if somebody gets a win inside the first minute, it's almost potentially going to be like somebody just falls down, right? Like, so it might just be Sam Hughes winning the quick win bonus, something like that. Like, then it's kind of like off the expected path for the fight. Like, I love the idea of trying to be contrarian and get over the field on Yasmin. I just don't think I'm going to get there just because I don't see her putting up the volume necessary to put up a monster score. I'll probably own her at the rate, for whatever the implied odds are for like a first round win. But I think that's going to probably be 20% or less.
I can see our sim. I can see our Sims, when they come out later today, have her optimal rate be like 6% or something. And for the highest priced fighter with the best win odds, she may have a lower chance of being optimal than Sam Hughes, her opponent.
Yeah, I agree. I'm guessing the Sims will have her at 20% or less. Probably not 20%. Probably like 15% or so, 15-20%. Maybe lower. But yeah, that'll be interesting.
So you like focusing on the underdogs on your Squirrel Patrol's takedowns article, right? It's not hitting the nuts. It's the takedowns. You have different branding for MMA. So what underdogs? I mean, obviously we got Roval, we got Ortega there, the five round underdogs. We kind of covered them. So if you're going to be making these lineups with, Naimov and Rosas and Charis and Moreno, and you're throwing in Emmanuel Torres, and it's like, okay, I got to take a shot on someone down here. And, they're not bad. I mean, from a win condition, I mean, there are people down there that could win. There's some people that have, decent shots at maybe getting a finish. I'm not all that enthused about the underdogs this week, but which ones are you looking at more?
So I think I'll probably target some of the Mexican underdogs. You know, I think so.
So that's it. Don't even bother with the projections. Don't. Who cares about the numbers, right? Who cares about you? Just go. Your John, is your attitude that you just have to in your model? You just said if this goes to the decision, Mexican fighter wins. So you're just giving 30 points to the Mexican fighter in those outcomes in your simulations. Just like nope, Mexican fighter wins decision. So, I mean, truthfully, I don't even think I don't even think that's a bad thought process.
Yeah, sometimes we don't have to overcomplicate things. I mean, I kind of like Victor Altamirano. I mean, he's 7,000, so like he doesn't need to do a whole lot. Like that might not be one of the highest paced fights on the card, but that's more a problem for Felipe Dos Santos than it is for Victor Altamirano. So even though he doesn't have like the highest win odds, I think, you know, they're high enough, right? So if he wins between a quarter and a third of the time, like he should definitely be owned. Probably at that rate. So I think he's going to end up being under-owned. I think that's probably something that'll come across in our sims. You know, we'll see. I do like the two lower-priced five-round fighters, like Ortega and Roy Val. I like Ortega like a lot more than Roy Val, but like Roy Val is going to see minuscule ownership. So I don't love the idea, but I'm gonna end up being over the field on Brandon Roy Val. Like I think that's because I think he's going to see very low ownership. Like potentially even lower than we've got projected. We've got him projected for about 15%. But I see him being in that 15 to 20% range. And like, he should be, you know, he's got about a 25 to 30% chance of winning the fight. And I just have such a hard time seeing the situation where he wins the fight and doesn't land on the winning line at 7,400. Christian Quinones is the fighter. You know, I think he's, let me make sure. Yeah, he's Mexican. like him. And I think, you know, that's a fight that's probably more of a coin flip than anything else. But again, it's 7,600. Like the coin flip fighter, the lower priced fighter should be probably higher owned in a coin flip situation. And then Jesus Aguilar, again, the Mexican fighter. But he's a fighter that's actually shown some knockout ability. I think he can grapple as well. He's actually beaten Edgar Chavez earlier in their careers in a pre-UFC fight. So I think that's noteworthy. I don't think he's necessarily as good as he looked in his last fight when he like knocked out Chandler Ross and threw two punches, I think. It was the first or second punch. But I don't think he's necessarily that good. I'm not expecting like first round, you know, early win knockout or anything like that. But again, he's, you know, underdog priced. So I think if you're going for underdogs, I think you should see some higher ownership.
But then you could always put more money backing Daniel Da Silva Lacerda, because that's what I've done. I mean, he's a Ponzi scheme, because, you know, from the outset, it's like, this is the type of guy that could and he's come close to finishing people in the first round and then dying.
Yeah.
This is probably his last chance. So if you want to take a shot on it, I mean, 6,900 for a guy that has like a, the odds of him winning in the first round, a car currently I see offshore are like plus 350 or something, plus four. I mean, like essentially his win odds are his in the first round. Like, it's like, that's like kind of his win condition. I can't turn down that at 6,900, because like Sam Hughes, if she somehow wins a decision in Mexico, like she may score like 58 points or 62 points, but I almost prefer to in larger field to play Lacerda than Altamirano, because Altamirano could get, you know, 70 points in a decision win and yeehaw. Small field, much better. Cash games, much better. But Da Silva Lacerda, it's like, okay, give me 100 points, kid. Oh, when you don't, I'm like, okay, I'm going to I need to make all my money back from playing, you know, every slate I would have like 25, 30% of this guy. And be like, is this the time? And then it's never the time.
Yeah, we'll
he's a bad fighter. By that. I just want to be clear. He's awful. Like, yeah. I'm not like, he's like this guy should be good. And why is he 0-4? It's like, no, this guy's awful. It's just that he has no defense and he flails at you. And he hopes, like, He could get it some wheel kick or some flying triangle or something like that. So, like, as opposed to other guys on the card down here, like, you don't expect Sam Hughes to come out or Victor Altamirano to come out. Or, I mean, Claudio Puelles, at least, like, okay, he could go for a first-round submission, right? But, like, these aren't guys that, like, come out bad out of hell and just go, I'm just going to waste 5 minutes of cardio, and then if I don't, then just, I hope to finish me and put me out of my misery.
Yeah. So, yeah, Daniel Lacerda da Silva, I made the joke with H3 Buddha before on the MMA Crunch Time 5 months ago for this exact same fight, that we were making a joke that he was going to change his name again and come back and try to use a different fighter to, you know, still be in the UFC. And 5 months later, I'm still breaking down the same fight because it was an incorrect fight stoppage last time. So Chiraz was basically winning the fight. I think maybe Chiraz like or sort of maybe tapped out or he appeared to be out. And so the ref stopped the fight, but he wasn't really out. So they're going to make them fight again. Right. They're going to make Chiraz win again. I think I'm seeing that the fight is officially on now. And then actually, I think Chiraz may have like started rehydrating or something. So that's why he missed weight so badly. They basically already agreed to fight at the catch weight when Chiraz got on the scale. So like he was okay. Already started to drink water. But weight
okay, so
on.
he probably cut more than 131.
Yeah.
Knew he wasn't going to make 125. And then they both said, let's just fight at 130. And I'm going to start eating again.
Yeah, exactly. But he had to like get on the scale anyway. Right. So it's like sometimes the line does move a little bit when you have these, like, you know, a change in weight class. And this, you know, this instance, it's going to a catch weight. Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, Lacerda da Silva is going to come in with very low ownership. And it's one of those situations where in my 150 set, I am going to get over the what I expect to be very low ownership, because he does have a chance to win in the first round. I mean, he's kind of first rounder bust. I think that CJ Vergara fight was the last fight he had that wasn't Edgar Chiraz. And he came close to winning that fight a couple of times in the first round. So, and like, that's going to be a massive score if he gets there at his price. That's going to put him on the winning lineup. I'd probably rather go with Brandon Royval. You know, if I'm going to have that mindset on a fighter, I'm probably going with Royval. But I'll be over the field on Lacerda, or at least over what I expect is his projected ownership to be. Claudio Puelles is a fighter I'm probably going to avoid. Actually, I don't go to a ton of UFC fights, but I did go to one with DraftKings last year. It was, the card at Madison Square Garden that Puelles was on. He was literally just on his back the entire time. And Dan Hooker, like, wouldn't engage. So it was one of those ones where the ref had to keep telling Puelles, you got to get, you have to stand up and fight. And then he would just, like, flop on his back again as soon as Hooker touched him. Because he's trying to get that, like, that knee bar or submission or whatever. I don't know. Like, I think he has a chance to put up a very low score. Even
right, but also, John, he's facing Ferez Ziam, who he's kind of a boring fighter also. Like, I look at this, like, I think Ziam is the type of fighter that, like, if he's up on the scorecards, feel free to just lie and flop. And if you want to flop and try to, like, okay, we're just going to slow this all the way down. Like, that, to me, the fights that I'm low on, just from a fight perspective, like, is the Ziam Puelles one and the Zell Huber Prado one, because, you know, Zell Huber, Prado has, it's more of a power puncher, so he would have to win by, he got 5 minutes for a knockout, and then you'd pretty much done. And Zell Huber, I mean, he doesn't, He's not a volume guy. I mean, he doesn't really wrestle. He's much more likely to stand on the outside, use his range, right? Protect himself against, the power shots of Prado, and then get a 30-27 point decision win, right? So those are the two fights that I'm less on. But John, you're going to be on Crunch Time tomorrow with Mike.
Yep.
And to break down all, because we're really not the fight breakdown people. I mean, even though we kind of look at what are the paths for certain things to happen and what fights are we targeting, but that's mostly Mike H3 Buddha and Liam, who have the Ground and Pound podcast, the expert survey, the fight breakdowns and everything that'll come out today for premium members. But then we take our sim. Me and you are the Sims people, right? We like the podcast comes out. It's like, okay, I listen to the podcast, but once our Sims come out, that's the page that me and you look at the most.
Yeah, exactly. It's weird because I don't do a lot of Sims, but I like to look at a lot of Sim output, if that makes sense. So just to touch on the last bit of the fights, I do like the Zellhuber fight, the Zellhuber Prado fight a little bit more than the Puelles Zion fight, just because like I think there's a chance Prado gasses out and then Zellhuber puts up a big score or vice versa.
Why don't you just say the real reason, John? One guy's Mexican and the other guy isn't.
Right. that plays a role. I won't lie. That does impact my thinking, especially in a fight that might go to a decision. But I think Zellhuber has a chance to put up a high score. Prado has a chance not to put up a high score. Whereas I don't think, like, Puelles and Zion might not gas out because they might just be standing there. Right. So less of a chance of one of them gassing out at the elevation in Mexico City if they're not really using up that much cardio. But got the takedowns article coming out later today. We'll have expert survey coming out later today, lineup HQ tags, and then crunch time tomorrow with Mike Brown, H3 Food.
You know what I'm going to do, John, for shits and giggles? I did it for a promo. I'm assuming I'm going to get a promo from Caesars or something like that. I typically get these UFC promos, $10 boost, whatever, but you can't put it on just one thing. You got to put some parlay together or something.
Yeah.
The last time I got one of these, I did well last week, but the time before they were in wherever they were in Abu Dhabi or whatever. I did like a 6-leg parlay of like, or 8-leg, whoever had like the DOV at the end, all the Dagestani names. I just said, I'm just taking all of them. I took them all across. They all won, right? So yeah. I turned like $10 into like $400 or something, whatever the else. I think I'm going to go and see what the lines are and to win on all the Mexican fighters, only in matchups when they're the only Mexican fighter.
Yeah, exactly. I think, I do think like Brian Ortega, does come out with Mexican flag, which goes into my thought process a little bit. So maybe not as big of an edge for Yair Rodriguez as we would think. But I think for the lower level fights, that is something you should go into your thinking. Is that, the home field advantage, maybe it's just that they're used to training in the elevation of Mexico City. It gives them an edge, maybe a little bit of an edge on the judges' scorecards. And I do think the UFC does tend to, for fights like this, right? Like, even for Canada, like they put good Canadian fighters up against less good non-Canadian fighters for some of the preliminary fights. If you have to give the home, field something to cheer for. So, it's definitely something that goes into my thinking. Don't hate the parlay idea, especially if you can find, a book where you're tending to get a little bit of a better line on the Mexican fighters, maybe parlay some of them together. Not the worst idea in the world if you're trying to use up one of those bonuses.
Right. It's not a racist thing. Like what we're talking about is like, it's just the natural biases of human beings, even if they don't realize that they're biased.
Yeah.
That we tend to see that the home team tends to get the calls on the cards more often than not in these combat sports. You can't prevent, obviously, someone from getting knocked out or anything, but you also have the home. Also, it's probably much more enjoyable to fight when the entire crowd is chanting for you versus booing the hell out of you whenever you do anything well. It has to play in somehow to all of this. Yes, they're baked into the win odds, but we're not talking about win. We're talking about daily fantasy where that, I mean, It doesn't matter. Like, whether or not Nemov is minus, whether or not Moreno is minus 300 or minus 500 or minus one, like, he's an $8,800 fighter that's going to score points, like, in whatever way that he scores points. It, like, if I have a 50-50 decision on who I'm going to play more often than not, it's probably going to be a fighter that, when I open up the DraftKings app, it's a Mexican flag.
Yeah. There's so many ways where the crowd impacts the fight. It is an absolute, like, home octagon advantage. I mean, this is a sport where at some point it does go to a judge's scorecard, and the judges in a close fight need to decide, like, whose punches made more of an impact. And so I think the crowd, you know, cheering after every fight or after every punch for one of the fighters, you have to believe that makes an impact. It's a sport where a ref has to make a split second decision. Do I need to stop this fight or not? And, you know, again, after a big punch, when the crowd goes, you know, crazy, you have to think it makes a meal, maybe a, it makes an impact around the edges. You know, travel time, you know, a fighter being in a place where they don't necessarily speak the language, you know, the elevation. I think there's so many edges for the Mexican fighters on this card that, yeah, I think that it is something you need to consider. And it is, you know, probably put into the lines somewhat. But yeah, maybe it goes into the fantasy scoring a little bit, and maybe it's not baked into the lines. So.
Okay, John, so you'll be on Crunch Time tomorrow with H3 Buddha, Mike Brown. There's NBA stuff tonight. I don't know if you're taking care of, you're doing everything today, NBA, MMA, it doesn't matter.
Yep. Yeah. Doing the regular NBA written content. I won't have an article for today. Did the article for the big slate yesterday. I think it's a 7:30 start, which is unusual on Fridays. But we'll have the regular, you know, expert survey, lineup HQ tags out, you know, have the consensus value rankings, and then we'll have the regular Grinders Live in Crunch Time.
And if you want that NBA content as well as all the MMA premium content, remember, the only thing that's free here for MMA is this show and Crunch Time. So if you want our projections, you want our ownership, you want our sims, you want our fight breakdown article, expert survey article, Squirrel Patrol's takedown article, and everything. Combo premium. Get everything. And we'll be back. We'll be back soon. You'll get everything with college. We got college basketball projections. We got everything here for you. So sign up. Click on that link in the description. You do get $10 off your first month. We also have a props and pick'em package that's included with that. You can get that separately if you want. So maybe there's some MMA props, there's NBA props tonight. I'll be taking care of that once I'm off the show, right? That's typically when I do it, see what the lay of the land is. So join us here, Roto Grinders. Join the Discord, rotogrinders.com/Discord, and I'll be back on Monday, like I always am here, talking about all the things you're thinking about in Daily Fantasy, props and pick 'em on Roto Grinders today.